The Tom Woods Show, episode 2030.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and fail to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Daniel McAdams, who is executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, and who co-hosts with Ron Paul the Ron Paul Liberty Report that so many of you enjoy. So, Daniel, welcome back.
Tom, it's great to be back with you. It's an honor.
All right, let's talk here. First of all, let me just say about the Ron Paul Institute. You guys have done such great work, and in the midst of all the craziness, you've continued to hold conferences and you stay in good, close touch with your members and supporters. You have a good, sizable social media following. So all in all, especially considering that the message you're promoting, you know, is against the entire establishment. It's against Conservatism, Inc. It's against mainstream libertarianism. Of course, it's completely against leftism. And you're doing it on a shoestring budget. That is one impressive feat.
Well, it's lonely out there.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I'm just kidding. There are so many great people, though. I mean, and it's, as Dr. Paul always says, it's always the quality, not the quantity. And I think for your show and your followers and ours, we've got the quality.
Well, I think we have both. I mean, to be producing an episode every single weekday, you know, that's a pretty decent amount of quantity, if I may say so, as a weekday producer. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, yeah, so you've struck this great balance. And of course, it's just incredible to me. I mean, Dr. Paul just this year turned 86, and he's the same Dr. Paul he's ever been, and he's still out there doing it day after day. And you guys have done some really, really interesting and important interviews when you've had guests on the show. And that brings me to at least the initial topic I wanted to hit on today, and that is navigating the current tech world when you have a controversial show. Now, so far, the various podcast apps have been one of the havens of free speech. They generally don't take your podcast episode down. I think they're too lazy to listen to them. But YouTube will take them down. And, you know, you have a presence on other platforms. I'm sure you're on Rumble, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. But are you also on Odyssey?
Yeah, we're on Odyssey and Rumble, YouTube, and the other mainstream ones.
Okay, all right. So here's the thing. I mean, you want to tell the truth. You have a very sizable YouTube audience. How many subscribers last time you checked?
We've got about 1/3 of a million.
Okay, so that's insane, right? You would never, ever want to start that over again from zero. But if you say...
It took a lot of work.
Yeah, it took a lot of work, absolutely. And if you say the wrong thing, you're at risk of losing everything. And it's very, very easy for non-content creators to say, oh, just ditch YouTube. Are you out of your mind? I could reach the entire world this way. It's like people saying, why would you go on so-and-so's show? Well, if so-and-so was going to let me talk to his audience, I'd be out of my mind not to do it. So I'm just wondering, how do you navigate that when you're dealing with controversial topics, particularly, for example, involving, let's say the V word, okay? How do you do it?
You know, it's funny, Tom, because we started the Ron Paul Institute back in 2013, right when Dr. Paul got out of Congress. And I mean, that's not that long ago, but the world is so different now. I mean, I remember the incredible democratizing effect that social media had on this young, upstart, newborn, new launched institute. I remember there was a certain point where we had, you know, more likes or more followers than the Heritage Foundation or something. And it was so exciting. You'd write an article, you'd put it up on your website, you'd put it up on your social media, and you just watch it take off. And it was like, you know, watching the lottery. And then, especially on Facebook, you take out a couple of ads maybe. Hey, this is going to be a good article. This is going to do well for us and have a lot of reach. Let's put a couple bucks into it and push it a little further. And that was great. And it started to feel a little bit like a ripoff because, hey, we got 200,000 followers and it's only reaching, you know, 1,000 people. So it started to scratch your head. And then Facebook started saying, well, you can't take out ads unless we know who you are and you've got to give us all this information. And it started to be a little less fun and a little less fun and a little less exciting to the point where, you know, basically, you know, it becomes sort of psychologically damaging. It's depressing in a literal clinical sense to put so much effort into something knowing that as a whim, it can be disappeared, it can be erased. And I just, never when we started this did I ever think anything like this would happen. I guess I'm just naive, Tom.
Well, you're going to join me in your naivete because I felt that way also. It seemed like this was a toothpaste that couldn't be put back into the tube. Now, at the same time, it's true that there are alternatives that have popped up. So I'm on Odyssey, and that's where I put all the way I've been dealing with it, which is kind of different from you guys, because you guys have really made YouTube kind of front and center in your content because you are a video show, and I'm not a video show. So yeah. I put my stuff on YouTube just because I figure might as well pick up a few thousand more listens to the episodes, but it's not 100% crucial to me, but I don't want to lose my channel either. Yeah. So I've been on Odyssey. And so what I'll do is when there's an episode of this show, a handful of times there've been an episode where I just know they're going to take it down and they're going to give me a strike. I just don't put it on YouTube. I'll put it over there on Odyssey. And so that's been my strategy. So for example, the other day I had Mark Crispin Miller at NYU, a very, very interesting guy on. Absolutely no way YouTube's going to let anybody hear what he has to say. So there's just going to be a gap on YouTube that day. And so that's what I did. I just put it over on Odyssey. And I have a little quick little redirect link, tomwoods.com/vid, V-I-D, gets you right over to my Odyssey page. And you'll see every single episode that I've ever created, including the ones I'm afraid to put up there. I think, here's one thing I've wondered. I've kind of thought about this out loud. Dave Smith talks about a lot of the same topics I do. And he talks about mandates and immunity and vaccines and whatever. And I don't think he's ever gotten a strike. Now, I have a feeling, and his YouTube videos are actual videos, so they get way, way more views than my show, which is just a still shot with the audio. So why is that? And my theory is he very rarely, I mean, sometimes he has guests, but most of the time it's just him and Robbie, and they're talking. Mm-hmm. And I think YouTube has it set so that if there are certain controversial guest names that just get triggered by YouTube. And I wouldn't say they automatically delete every single video with that name in it, but I think it prompts a review or some kind of thing. And since Dave doesn't have that many guests, whereas I've had Ivor Cummins, he's radioactive to YouTube. Jay Bhattacharya is now radioactive on YouTube. Even Jay Bhattacharya of Stanford blankety blank University. I think that's in part what's happening.
You see, Tom, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way, but what you've just done is literally insane. And it's what I do and it's what everyone does. We sit around wondering, what is their formula?
Yeah.
What are they trying to do? What does it take? And it reminds me, I'm sure you've read Darkness at Noon. It reminds me of Rubishov as he sat in his prison cell, going over his entire life, wondering what he possibly could have done to displease the party. He was always so loyal to the party. What could it have possibly have been? And that's what we engage in every day. And that's why I'm not even joking when I say it kind of produces a form of mental illness where you sit around wondering what is that secret thing that they're looking out for and I better not do that. And I spent some time, in just post-communist East Europe. And there's a point really where you internalize it and you don't even think, hey, that might be controversial. I won't say it. You don't even think it. And that's pretty scary when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. So I'm doing my best to navigate it. And now I think I talked to you about this when I was down in Texas. I think you were the person I talked to.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, my memory as a 49-year-old is not what it was. But but I was telling you that I'm going to be interviewing RFK Jr. I know you guys have gotten him. It's a little easier for you guys to get him because of Ron Paul is Ron Paul. It was trickier for me to get him because he doesn't know who I am. But it turns out he and I have a couple of mutual friends, and one of them sent him an email saying, oh, listen to me, this is why you need to be on Woods' show. And then just listed bang, 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 bang. And then he wrote back and said, okay. So I thought, all right, nice. But of course, this episode isn't going to go anywhere near YouTube. So my thought was, and then I think you were suggesting that I needed to look into this. My thought was I would make a video for that episode in which I would say, and it would say Tom Woods interviews RFK Jr. And it would be me saying, hey, everybody, welcome to the Tom Woods Show. I interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. today. But since YouTube doesn't believe adults should be able to have conversations freely, I can't post it here. However, it is posted over on my Odyssey channel, whatever. And I think you told me that they have some kind of, I don't know if it's a policy or just a pattern of taking videos down, if you promote content on some other video platform.
And I don't know that for sure. Someone told me that, so it's worth looking into. But, you know, going back to your question, your original question, you know, we did the same thing for the first time ever with our Washington conference, because I've been so happy to have the playlists on YouTube. It's so convenient for people who are used to going to see our show. And because, you know, we had RFK speak, we had Thomas Massie, oh my gosh, right, speak, and Gerald Celente and Judge Napolitano, I thought there's no way this is radioactive. I'm going to go ahead and put it on Odyssey. The guys were very receptive to it over there. And I'm just not even going to go on Twitter. Because as you say, especially with RFK, because you brought it up, literally the day that YouTube banned RFK and shut down all of his channels, Twitter did the same. They all acted in unison. They pulled that one show from our archive at YouTube. They pulled the RFK show the same day. So it wasn't like all of a sudden they realized, no, they went back and they did a search. They went back through history. It really, I mean, at the risk of being cliche, it is Orwell. He had to go down the memory hole. No, sir, that episode never happened. You know,
that's crazy. That's unbelievable. And I really am curious about how Kennedy's thinking about this issue, because he does say in his book that his view is that these so-called public health regulatory bodies and institutions served a good purpose at one time, and then because of regulatory capture, they got corrupted. And it's a shame, and this is, you know, and he's got his complaints about the market economy and this and that. But he also notices that practically everybody on the left who used to be his ally is not only on the other side, but vociferously on the other side, and has condemned and repudiated him, and cheers his being censored everywhere.
Yeah.
Does that not give him pause that maybe, in the same way that our friend Michael Rechtenwald at NYU, when you know, he said one or two wrong things, and he was treated like, like he was radioactive. Even the most basic courtesies were no longer extended to him. That made him stop and think, there could be something in my ideology that produces this kind of outcome in people. It really made him do a real soul searching. I don't really see that with RFK, and I wonder why not. I'd be curious to ask him.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the thing is, as you were saying, you know, he wasn't familiar with your work, but that's because he ran in much different circles. And there are some, you know, there are some overlap in some of the things that he's done in the past and what you do. But he was in a different milieu than you were. And now all of a sudden, this whole thing has shaken everything up. And as you say, he looks around at his once allies on the progressive left. And you're right. They hate his guts. They want him dead. I mean, probably literally, I would be concerned if I was him. They hate him so much because he has such a powerful name. He has such a powerful way of speaking, even through some of his shortcomings and some of the problems that he has speaking. He's powerful. If anyone doubts it, you know, watch the speech that we had him in Washington. But, you know, the same is true with people like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi. These are people that because they went outside the canon of the cancel culture left, they find themselves more hated than you or I among the left, probably. It's pretty interesting. But I think what you're suggesting is, will that next leap take place? And I do wonder in people like him, and I wondered, and we watched Greenwald at the Mises conference a couple of weeks ago, and to me, it seemed like he was closer and closer toward embracing a kind of, for lack of a better term, a kind of libertarianism that we espouse. And I wonder if people are going to be pushed more into this camp as they realize that, you know, it's not just that it needs better people and it needs reform. It's that the whole thing stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Hey, everybody, let's thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. We're heading into the new year of 2022 very soon. So why not resolve to make that a happy year for yourself by striving to overcome the obstacles standing between you and the happy future you want? There are a lot of problems people might face, like depression, stress, anxiety, that are extremely difficult, if not impossible, to overcome entirely on your own. And that is where BetterHelp comes in. I know you look on social media and it seems like everybody has a perfect life, so you feel like there's something wrong with you because your life isn't perfect. Well, I'll tell you something. My life hasn't been perfect, and I've used BetterHelp myself. They figure out exactly what you need. They match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can talk to that person over the phone, through video. You can send messages. No sitting in any uncomfortable waiting rooms, no long drives. Not to mention, it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. They've got a ton of great testimonials. And in fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/woods. I think I mentioned this once, but I follow an account on Twitter who I don't want to single her out because I don't intend to, I don't want to embarrass her, but she's one of these New York City moms who's just, you know, who was a Democrat and who's just been appalled at all the irrationality. And she cannot believe how isolated she now is because she dares to say that all these crazy things being done to kids in particular make no sense. And then this very same person was talking about the need for the public health institutions in America to set out good, reliable guidelines for the American diet. And I thought, why would you want these exact people to set? I mean, there are two good reasons not to do it. Number one, you've just witnessed how they've treated it a very important issue over the past 2 years, and it's been completely unreliable and full of nonsense. Yeah. Well, I guess there are three reasons. Second is, these are the same people who told you don't eat eggs. I mean, these people told you not to eat eggs. It's like they're trying to make you unhealthy, you know? But the third thing is, look at the food pyramid that they recommended where you were supposed to eat 11 servings of grain a day. So this, you know, this makes cereal part of your healthy breakfast. And then we look around and everybody's 50 to 100 pounds overweight. And, you know, nobody wonders, well, maybe that was really bad advice. So it's really hard to break the addiction to the state. Even when you see the worst of it, her instinct was still, we need to get some good guidelines from public health. That's the last thing we need.
Yeah. And I can't fault them because I was there, and I don't want to bore anyone with my story again, but I was there. If only we could get some good people doing foreign policy and stop supporting these damn commies overseas, we'd be on the right track. Oh, that Clinton, what a jerk. And then I did, thank God, I came to the realization that is not the answer. I slapped myself upside the head and started reading Lou Rockwell and realizing that's not the answer. We don't want to support anyone or oppose anyone. And I think they're just not there. And I wish, as Dr. Paul always talks about how, he wishes he was a better communicator, even though I think he's a terrific communicator, but we all probably feel that way. I wish there was some way we could bring them a little bit further toward our position on this. These things can't be reformed. As was it John McManus once said, you can't reform cancer, right?
Yeah. You know, and are you talking about the John Birch guy?
Yeah.
You know, funny thing he said to me once, because I would keep trying to say to him, and he's still out there, as far as I know. And he's in his 80s, and he's like Ron Paul, and then he just keeps on going. I haven't talked to him in a while, but I would have lunch with him when I was in Massachusetts. He had a home there. And I would say, I think you guys are just going way too far on the conspiracy stuff. I mean, practically speaking, you're right on everything. I mean, you know, the wars and the Federal Reserve, you're right on everything. And you're great on economics, but this, you know, you guys go too far. And he said, all right, well, if it weren't sinister, what's going on inside the regime, if it weren't sinister, and if it was all just, boy, they're just a bunch of dumb jokers who make mistakes, wouldn't they occasionally make a mistake in the right direction? Like, wouldn't they accidentally do the right thing? And yet they consistently, time after time, do the wrong and destructive thing. Now, if it was just stupidity, you would think it would be kind of random what they would wind up doing. Sometimes they do the right thing, sometimes they do the wrong thing. You know, and I thought, well, okay, I'll hand it to you. That is hard to explain.
Yeah, it is a good point. I spoke with John at a Catholic conference once, and although with some disagreements, you know, he's certainly a straight shooter when it comes to all this. But that's exactly it. I mean, that's, I guess, my realization this past year and a half, which is, you know, I used to always say, those dummies running foreign policy, they're so dumb, don't they get it? And now I'm starting to come to the realization that it's by design. You know, they mean to do these things. It's intentional. So that is a real wake-up call as well.
Yeah, and it makes it hard when you try to respond, because your natural instinct is to respond by saying, no. If you want to have a good outcome, you should be doing A, B, and C. And then you realize they don't want to have a good outcome. They want chaos.
Yeah.
That benefits them. What did 2020 do for viewership for you guys?
The show did fairly well. I suspect, and again, here I am being Rubishov again. I mean, I suspect that they're throttling our show because we have a lot of subscribers. We talk about topics in the news, but we're always around 10 or 15,000 views within the 24-hour period, which is what we use to measure the progress, you know, and it's just this feeling that you're getting throttled. You know, sometimes if we start out really fast within the first hour, all of a sudden it dies off quickly. And, you know, I'm wondering if there's someone that's putting their thumb on the wheel, you know, or something. It's hard to know.
Well, I hope this won't seem morbid, but I'm just curious. The day Dr. Paul returned after his stroke, was there a spike in viewership that day?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And there's a spike when something big happens. And, you know, the show overall is growing. It's good, steady growth. And that's why as we started the show, it's hard to walk away from YouTube because we've spent so much time and effort building that audience. But we've also come to the realization after a lot of soul searching that it probably is time to move on and think of an exit strategy. And, you know, we're actually talking to a group now that may make that happen for us. And as hard as it is, Dr. Paul and I are both, we hate change, but it's probably time to do that, probably for our own mental health and for the long-term health of the show.
Right. Now, I don't know how the numbers break down in terms of the video viewership and people who listen to as a podcast, because you still do have that audience. And as say, so far, the podcast apps let you say what you want.
Yeah, and we get a lot more listens on our podcast, the audio only, than we do on the video. So we're on, I think we're on Spotify. And what's the other big one? SoundCloud, I think it is.
Yeah.
We get two or three times as much on SoundCloud as we do.
And of course, but I'm also thinking about Apple Podcasts or just any app you might download to your phone. I actually use something called Podcast Republic. And it turns out it's only like 2% of podcast listeners use that. But I just find it intuitive and easy to use. Or Stitcher. There are all these.
Yeah.
So you can reach a lot of people. But you know, as you say, you built up, this is just not right that you built up. And the thing is, they have this strike system. First, they give you a warning, and the warning does not count as one of your strikes. Then you get three strikes. I don't know why they don't just call it four strikes. I don't know, you know, instead of this crazy warning and then three strikes. So I got a warning, and then I got a strike. My strike, the warning was for one of my episodes with Ivor Cummins, and there was
no
attempt to explain to me what was wrong with it. But then the second one, the strike, if you can believe it, it was Thomas Massie, a sitting U.S. congressman.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's just amazing. I mean, it literally is doublethink, you know, where you're expected to believe two completely diametrically opposed things at the same time. And the key word is believe, you know, because I don't know if you saw this, but I think it was a couple of days ago, Twitter announced some new rules that said you would be punished if you tweeted anything to the effect of the shot doesn't stop transmission or infection from the virus. Like, that is a punishable thing.
Yeah.
And that is so objectively part of the reality-based community. Anyone who tunes into any of our so-called public health experts, they say that exact thing. And there's no way they don't know that. But nevertheless, if you happen to tweet it, you're kicked off for violating community standards.
Well, but people have mocked that so viciously that I wonder if they'll actually enforce it. So Glenn Greenwald the other day tweeted out, uh-oh, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky is in real danger of being banned from Twitter because here's a video of her saying that the vaccines can't prevent transmission.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, this is another thing I hate to do, but go back to the commie era. It's always selective enforcement.
Yeah.
We don't like Woods. Woods is too effective. Woods has got a big audience. Yeah, there are a lot of other guys who said the same thing, but we got to get rid of this Woods guy. And that's what they'll do.
I have a feeling, a funny feeling, Daniel, they would get rid of me before they would get rid of Walensky. That's just my feeling, my gauging the situation.
but you know, what's amazing is, sorry to interrupt you, but you know, just the Joe Rogan, Dr. McCullough podcast, you know, it's a 3 hours. I can't sit that long, but I watched the beginning. I watched some clips and it's unbelievable. This is a guy who is one of the most published medical professionals in the world in history. So he's not a slouch by any stretch, and he's not a lunatic by any stretch. He's been editor of some of the most prestigious scholarly journals in medicine and epidemiology, et cetera, et cetera. And here, Twitter was permanently banning people who put up parts of what he had to say with Joe Rogan. It's just, they don't even try to make sense anymore.
I did notice that within 24 hours of that episode, listing as trending on Twitter was the name Peter McCullough, with tens of thousands of mentions. And I personally think that trending thing is, I don't think it's just an objective listing of what's most popular on Twitter. I'm just not buying that.
Yeah.
So he would have to have been mentioned like crazy to show up there.
Yeah. It's like the New York Times bestseller list. It's not the book that sold the most.
Yeah. And of course, why wouldn't you think
it
would be?
I think you said that in your speech.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It is very subjective. And so it's a miracle. It's a total miracle that the RFK book got on that list at all, given how subjective it is. When I spoke to the publisher, it was at number 7, but they were unhappy that it wasn't number 1 because they say, you actually can, there is a number based on how many times the book has been scanned that will tell you what the number 1 selling book is. And they say, we have it. We have the number 1 selling book.
It's amazing.
And we're number 7.
Yeah. I did something that I rarely do, which is I pre-ordered it because I wanted it to really hit the ground running. And thankfully it did. I think enough people did that where it started off with a lot of sales in the first day. I mean, it's not a head scratcher. That's the sad part. It's not a head scratcher why they're suppressing the book.
It's incredible the extent to which this one man, Fauci, will be protected at all costs. Because this is not a book about public health it is incidentally that, but it is directly an examination of the career of one man. Now, of course, it covers a lot of material in doing so, but the response that, you know, the blackouts, the bannings, it's not coming because they sat down, read the book, and assessed the evidence. It's because it's an attack on Fauci. Because Fauci is the science, remember, Daniel.
That's right. Just like, I don't know if you saw this AP piece that came out a couple of days ago about RFK.
Oh.
I mean, it was a raw hit piece. Basically, he's a terrible guy because a lot of people are listening to him. And a lot of people think he's on the right track. So he's awful and evil.
It's like Pravda at this point. You just can't believe anything.
Yeah.
That's not a news story. AP is supposed to write news stories. That's not a news story. That's your stupid, predictable lizard person opinion. And the photograph that accompanied that article, it's a picture of him from behind with his arms in the air. So it looks like he's holding a religious revival.
Yeah. Either that or Mussolini, right?
something weird, you know. And
he's a bad guy.
Yeah. And sometimes when there are people the media wants us to dislike, and even sometimes when they are unlikable people, they'll find that, if you have any experience with cameras at all, everybody has some picture where they're making some weird facial expression. It happens to everybody. It's not just evil people, you know, where your face is contorted or something, because you were in the middle of saying a word that contorted your face when you said it. And I've seen time and again, somebody we're obviously not supposed to like, and of all the photos they could use, it's that crazy, terrible one.
It happens a lot with Biden, but I think that's just because he usually makes those faces.
Yeah, that's right. But yet AP doesn't use those pictures. AP has got whatever. They'll have their file photo.
Yeah. The presidential. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I didn't expect we were going to solve this problem in our conversation, but just get it out there for people to understand that it's a minefield that people like you, Dr. Paul, and I are navigating, trying to get this information out to the public in a way that maximizes the potential audience without compromising the content.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, we have to close this on a more positive note. I'm hearing Dr. Paul's voice in my head because he hates when I close the show with something negative. But, you know, I think there's so much pent up, you know, in this era of treachery, there's also so much opportunity because there's so much pent up demand for people to tell the truth, like Tom Woods, like Ron Paul, like RFK. And look what's happening to Rumble. I mean, it's billing itself as a free speech alternative. They acquired Locals. They're going public. Even Trump is doing business with them. So their success shows you, and I think should encourage us, that even when it seems dark, there are a lot of good people out there, Tom.
It's true. It's true. And it's happening slowly, but I do think, based on some numbers I'm seeing and based on an awful lot of anecdotal data I'm hearing, that that middle group of people that, you know, will outwardly conform but isn't completely convinced, they're not fanatics, they're not cultists, is starting finally to swing our way. Because yeah. I think they have overplayed their, the bad guys have overplayed their hand. And that's somewhat encouraging. I mean, you look around the world, there are so many bad developments. But if any country is going to lead us out of this, despite the fact that we've had no massive on-the-streets protests like we've seen in Europe, if there's any country that's going to do it, it's this one. It's the one we
yes.
live in.
Yes, yes, exactly. And we are doing it. And that's some reason to encourage, you know, we can wave the flag now for a good reason, finally.
That's right. That's right. That's right. USA, USA. Exactly. We finally get to say that unironically. All right.
Exactly.
So the website, RonPaulLibertyReport.com, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. RonPaulInstitute.org is the institute's.
The institute. Okay.
Address.
Yeah. So I'll put the institute at RonPaulInstitute.org. I'll put that on the show notes page. But continued good luck with it. And, you know, you're doing very, you know how important the work you're doing is. And we all appreciate it. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody, just a reminder that I take a little time off at the end of the year. I'm actually taking less than usual this year. So a couple of episodes this week, a few episodes next week, and then we will hit the ground running starting January 3rd, the first weekday of 2022. I've got 5 great episodes planned for you for that week. So as we wrap up 2021, again, I'll say how much I appreciate everybody who's been listening, who's been supporting the show, spreading it around, letting people know about it, helping me publicize it, and just spreading the ideas that we're trying to spread under very, very challenging circumstances. I'm very, very grateful to all of you. So with that, I just want to remind you that if you missed episode 2029 with Mark Crispin Miller because I didn't put it on YouTube, well, then you missed out on something really, really great. So you can find that on my Odyssey channel, tomwoods.com/vid, or of course you can find it at tomwoods.com/2029. So enjoy that. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.